Welcome to the Content Bounce House, where content marketing leaders bounce ideas around. I'm your host, Ryan Sargent, and Content Bounce House is brought to you by Verblio, the world's friendliest content creation platform. Today, I'm talking with Mark Rogers, who is the director of content marketing at Fresh Paint. Mark, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, Ryan, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
So I know the Fresh Paint gig is new. I think you said week three?
Yeah, brand new into it. So we've been going full speed, though.
Where on earth did you start?
So my background, I was director of content strategy at an agency prior to this. And you would think my first thing would be to dive in and spend a lot of time figuring out strategy, but that actually wasn't where I wanted to start. I wanted to start by like finding quick wins and just getting going with content. That's been my initial focus in the first 3 weeks is how can we find quick wins through either like refreshing content, repurposing content, or finding like quick topics to start just writing about to show everybody on the team like the power of content marketing and what we can do here. And then once we get our feet under ourselves with some production, then I'm actually going to shift into content strategy.
Is most of that early production in-house? Like are the quick wins something that you're executing on yourself or use an outside resource?
Yeah, right now everything's in-house. It's all me. I think eventually we'll probably outsource some of this stuff, but I always find that I'm better at writing briefs and creating content to help other people create content if I've done it myself first. So I wanted to just make sure I know how to write a blog post for Fresh Paint before writing a brief about writing blog posts for Fresh Paint.
Tell us a little bit about Fresh Paint for starters. You're brand new to the role, but like big company, small company, what kind of arena are you operating in?
Yeah, I'd say relatively small company. We're just over 20 employees right now. We're growing really fast, which is cool. So about the product itself, we are a customer data platform, but we focus specifically on healthcare and helping healthcare companies do advertising and analytics in a HIPAA compliant way, which is a really big deal in the healthcare space right now. So we've had some pretty good success. Our product seems to be gaining some traction. So from a content marketing perspective, it's just my goal to A, help the sales team work a little faster, and then also B, just build more awareness and get more people into the Fresh Paint funnel.
Would you say more of like a sales-led growth motion or product-led?
Yeah, definitely sales-led, which is cool. I think from a content marketing perspective, sales-led motion is a lot of fun. You get to learn from the sales team, find out what they need, how we can help them. And that's, I think, just some really cool content comes out of that. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, so I've gotten to talk with a couple product-led growth content experts, Emily Triplett Lentz and Cameron Jenkins and stuff like that. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, what's different? What do content marketers need to do differently when they're in the sales-led environment instead?
The biggest thing with sales-led is, I mean, obviously at the end of the day, any content marketing, it's all about helping sales in some capacity. So if you're product-led, you're focused on like bringing as much into the product as you can so the product can do sales. If you're sales-led, then it's all about A, bringing people into the funnel, but then B, helping out the sales team close more deals through content. So we've got a pretty heavy focus on like sales enablement style content. So I'm working on setting up the motions to build a strong collaboration with the sales team so I can understand like what friction points people are hitting in the sales process. What questions do they have? What are the things that just consistently pop up that the sales team keeps finding themselves answering? And then it's building content around that so that either the prospects can do their own education and learn the answer to this before they even have the question, or sales team can send follow-up info with the answers to those questions.
I know it's early. Do you have an example? I'm thinking of like, maybe I'm a content marketer who's brand new to this whole sales-led thing. I know I need to build sales enablement content. How do you connect one of those, like say, customer questions to a content type or a content distribution channel?
Yeah, it's funny you asked this question because I was literally just having this conversation in Slack with some account execs on my team. But they've been saying that a lot of customers, prospects keep asking about like, what's the difference between Fresh Paint and this company? What's the difference between Fresh Paint and this company? There's like three or four companies that consistently come up. People just are asking, what are the differences here? I don't quite understand it. So an easy avenue for me right there is let's build content to answer those questions. What's the difference between Fresh Paint and X? What's the difference between Fresh Paint and Y? And just create straightforward content that answers that. And that's something that the sales team, they'll have as a quick resource. So they can either send it over right away if the prospect has that question, or they can read through themselves just to build up their own education of the nuanced difference between those tools. Because on a sales call, you're not going to have the time to jump to whatever company's website and be like, what is the difference here? But if I've created the content, you'll have that knowledge. You can either just talk to it or send them a resource to follow up with afterward.
Cool. You mentioned company about 20, but you're a team of one.
Yeah, team of one, which is cool.
How is that different than your work at an agency?
It's cool because I'm responsible for everything, which I'm a bit of a control freak, so I find that pretty exciting. I get to make my own decisions and do what I think is best. Working at an agency is cool too, because you have a team to do everything you can possibly think of. When you're a team of one, it's, like I said, it's cool to make your own decisions, but you also need to be really, really, really good at prioritization, because you can't do everything under the sun. There's a zillion ideas I have. I've only been at Fresh Paint for 3 weeks, like I said, and my content backlog that I've got built of like ideas I need to write is already, 25, 30 pieces long, and it's just going to continue to grow. And, you know, as long as I'm a content team of one, it's always going to continue to grow. So it's all about like prioritization, figuring out what is most important, what will actually help us achieve the two main goals that we're driving toward. Focus on that, and everything else just gets put on the back burner for now. And hopefully in a year or so, we'll get to it.
You worked at Animals, which is an agency that I know has a lot of followers and fans in the content world. Director of content strategy there. What did a day in the life look like in terms of doing strategy at Animals?
It was fun, honestly. It was busy. My role was everything from sales to leading a team of strategists to doing strategy myself. So it was kind of like every day was like whatever's needed to be done is done. But a lot of my day was like onboarding new customers and having conversations about where they see their content going. So I spent a lot of time talking about like the goals that they want to get out of content. I'd have conversations with them that are pretty similar to this. I'd be asking like, is your organization sales-led or product-led? And we'd talk about the differences between those and where they see content fitting in. And if they said things like, oh, sales-led, then I'd reach out and talk to their sales team and learn how we can build like a collaboration there. And like I said, there's some similarities between the agency role and this role. Difference is obviously I'm responsible for executing instead of just strategy, but that's cool.
So on the strategy side at an Animals, I'm wondering, what were some of the most exciting or impressive answers you got when you started talking strategy with clients at Animals?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
Did someone ever come to one of those calls and be like, I want our content to do this? And you're like, eyes go wide, mind gets blown.
I had some really interesting conversations with company. I mean, this ties into what we were just talking about, but they came in, probably about a year ago, they were the first company to ever come in and say, like, we want sales and they want content. Can you do that? And I hadn't really heard that before. And I think this actually kind of ties into the broader market. At that point, it was like just the start of the tech downturn. And I was just starting to see companies like try to figure out like what types of content are more focused on ROI rather than just creating awareness, which is great. It's sometimes hard to like track awareness to ROI through content. So they really wanted us to come up with types of content that were directly responsible for generating sales and helping the sales team, which is obviously sales enabled content has been around for a long time and Animals as an agency had done it for a while, but I'd never had a customer just come in and say, we want sales enabled content. How can you do that? That was cool. It was a fun way to kind of flip things because usually it would start with like a discovery call. We figure out how we can best help, but they knew right away, here's what we want. Here's how we need to do it. Where can you fit in to help best? And that was a cool conversation to have with them.
What's the most unusual piece of content that you were a part of at Animals? I always ask this of like agency folks because you get to see so many different industries and clients.
We did a lot of really like cool big stuff, like big state of the industry reports, which are always fun. Some really interesting content. I'm trying to remember the name of the company is blanking on me right now, even though I remember the content, but we did like choose your own adventure style content where it was about like the pieces about leadership development. And it would like, as you read through the piece, it'd be like, what would you do in this situation? And if you answered the question this way, it would like push you to this part of the article. Or if you answered it this way, it'd push you into this article, which was honestly fun. It was an interesting way to create some engaging content just in a different style. It really reminded us of those like choose your own adventure books where you like read through the book and at the bottom. It's like, if you want your main character to do this, go to page 49. If you want to do that, go to page 72. So it was a similar style and it was a pretty successful piece and it was fun. I wish we got the chance to do more of those.
So a piece of philosophy around content strategy I know you and I agree on is that SEO is not the only distribution angle, should not be the only distribution angle. Building content only for SEO and not for any other purpose is doing yourself a disservice.
Yep.
And I wanted to offer the soapbox to you and have you say whatever you wanted to say on that topic.
SEO is not part of my strategy at Freshpaint whatsoever. And that's partially because, A, I'm really focused on helping the sales team, like I said before, and SEO doesn't directly help the sales team. If we're ranking for a keyword, like what is a customer data platform, that's not helping our account executive, Mary, close a deal today. That might help in 6 years. But the big thing about distribution channels in general is I like to think about distribution from an idea standpoint rather than a piece of content standpoint. Rather than try to distribute a piece of content, think about it more holistically. What's the idea behind this piece of content? What are the best formats for that piece of content? And in those formats, how can we get people to read that or watch it or listen to it, whatever that format may be? And I think in some instances, SEO is a component of that, but it doesn't always have to be.
What I love about that too is it forces you to think about distribution up front, which is something that I think Russ Simmons has made an entire personal brand out of reminding us on distribution. And it connects you to your audience as well. And it forces you to put yourself in their shoes. My favorite part, though, is that it actually gets you to build the content that's channel specific. I think one of the biggest mistakes folks make with repurposing is they take a piece of content that was designed for a particular medium and they try to just port it over without thinking about how people experience content in a different format. What are some repurposing examples that you've had a lot of success with? And like, how much did you have to change the content?
I think you have to do a lot of work to repurpose for a specific platform, because it's like you just said, each piece of content really needs to be built for that specific platform. So it gets back to that idea I was talking about before, like distributing an idea rather than a piece of content, or repurposing an idea rather than a piece of content. So let's say you ghostwrite a blog post for your CEO. If you're going to repurpose that, you need to think, what's the best way to resonate this idea on LinkedIn? Or what's the best way for this idea to resonate on a guest post on a third-party website? Or what's the best way to get this idea to resonate on Reddit or something like that? So it's all about thinking about the platform, thinking about what is the best way to get my idea to resonate on that platform, and then putting the idea into that best format, rather than just like taking the link to the ghostwritten post and slapping it on Reddit and slapping it on LinkedIn and slapping it everywhere else. Because in that instance, you're just not going to get too much exposure out of that.
You talked a little bit about measurement a minute ago, and like that awareness can be tough to tie back to ROI on content. How do you measure whether or not a piece of content is successful? And I'm thinking specifically because you're not necessarily using SEO metrics. Yep. I think we fall back on those a lot. And for this content that isn't using SEO as a primary strategy, how do you know if it's working?
Yeah, and that's such a good question. And I think that's another reason that I think people default to SEO a lot, because it is a little easier to track. It's easy to say, we've ranked for this many keywords, we've driven this much organic traffic. It's easier to say those things. But when we're looking at other styles of content, it really depends on what we're trying to do. If it's a true like classic piece of sales enablement, I'm not actually looking for a huge amount of page views. What I'm really looking for is maybe time on page, just making sure that people are actually reading that page, spending a lot of time engaging on it. Also might look at things like second page after they landed on that sales enablement piece. Did they check out our pricing page, or did they check out a product specific page, or just what did they do next after that? And that can tell you a lot about how engaged that person is. I also think like just those kind of like qualitative metrics can be helpful. I was listening to a sales call recently from one of our account execs at Freshpaint, and somebody on that sales call, the prospect she was talking to, said that the ebook that you guys published on this topic made it really clear and really easy for me to understand what this topic was about. Sometimes you don't need anything more than that. If you're helping your audience understand something more clearly and you have proof of that, that's like the biggest proof point that you can ever get. You never want to discount those qualitative points either.
Well, and there's the secret message in there also, listen to sales calls.
Yeah, that's super valuable, I think, for any content marketer, whether you're focused on bottom of the funnel sales enablement or you're focused on the top of the funnel. You can learn so much from the sales team and from those sales calls.
I love the second page stat. I have also used that one. If my bottom of funnel content is putting people on the pricing page, it's doing its job.
That's a huge, huge thing to be looking at.
Then we can blame the CRO folks. The pricing page isn't converting, right?
Yeah, it's not our fault at that point. We got you. We got them to the page. Come on.
How do you decide what to get refreshed? I guess this is both like a prioritization and a refresh question. How long do you wait? How do you decide? What do you change first?
That's an awesome question. So I've got two different answers. I've got the answer if you're focused on SEO, and then I've got my Freshpaint specific answer because I'm not focused on SEO. If you are focused on SEO, I'd say like 6 months. you know, watch traffic from organic search. If you're getting the rankings that you're hoping for, then you probably don't need to touch it. But if you're not getting the rankings you're hoping for, then after 6 months, consider maybe we need to refresh this. What can we do to make this page more interesting, more engaging, have more information on it that's more relevant to our audience? Those are generally the things at a high level that you'd be looking for. For Freshpaint, I'm still looking for content refresh opportunities, but the lens I'm looking through is more like, how can we get more conversions out of this content? So are we using the right CTAs? Do we have the right copy on those CTAs? Is there a quick opportunity to drive more traffic to that page to get more conversions out of those CTAs that we have? I spent a lot of my time over the past couple of weeks just looking at the calls to action we have on all that content, making sure it is as relevant as possible. If it's not, do we have a more relevant offer? If we don't, can I build a more relevant offer? If it is as relevant as possible and we're still not getting good conversions out of it, maybe I need to change the placement of that CTA, or maybe I need to rewrite the piece a little bit to make it a little more enticing to try to trigger some thoughts in somebody's mind as they're reading through it. Like, hey, I wish I knew more about this. And then we'll have that offer like, hey, here's this, learn more. That's kind of the lens I'm looking through right now.
So I have to take back the joke I made about CRO earlier. Is that what you're saying? That we have to sometimes have to optimize the on-page content too?
No, we can make fun of CRO all we want.
I have to ask everybody about AI, right? And I think with the type of content you're producing, I doubt you're using much AI. But I'm also guessing that as part of your agency work, you have been on the front lines with folks asking about AI.
Oh, yeah.
What on earth should we be doing right now? Because it feels like it was moving so fast and it slowed down a little bit.
There was definitely like shiny object syndrome at first when ChatGPT first came out, everyone was like, oh man, this is so cool. It's going to do everything. It's amazing. I love it. And then when people started using it, they were like, wow, this like it writes words, the words string together, but doesn't really sound good. It doesn't always make sense. It's not always factually correct. I think there's still a lot of people using AI and it can be really, really helpful. And I'd still recommend using it as sort of a starting point. So if you have an idea, just do a little sparring with AI to help you flesh out the idea or point you in the direction of where you need to research about a specific idea. I think there's a lot of benefits to that. And I use it from that perspective. If I have an idea at Freshpaint, or if I'm listening to a sales call, like we were talking earlier, and somebody mentions something that I'm just not familiar with, the first place I go is ChatGPT and just punch in a question about whatever that person said. Usually gives you a relatively succinct answer. And then from there, I do additional research to make sure, all right, is this answer actually accurate? Is it helping me make sense of this topic? And then as I'm writing a piece, a lot of times, like if I get stuck somewhere, I find it helpful just to jump into AI and talk through, honestly, have a chat with ChatGPT about what I'm stuck on and why I'm stuck on it. And it doesn't always give me like a perfect answer, maybe the most helpful answer, but a lot of times it just gets me thinking in a different way of, oh, here's how to get around this problem, or, oh, here's how to solve it. So that's how I'd recommend using it. I still think it does speed up the workflow overall. It's just about don't have the expectations of it writing a polished or even good piece for you.
Do you think there's room in a content strategy to plan on using AI content? And if so, what kind of use case?
I definitely think there is. I think if you're focused on like top of the funnel SEO content, AI can still do a really good job there. If you're doing like, let's say you're building out a dictionary of every basic term in your industry, and you're doing that because you think you can get a lot of search traffic for it, I would honestly start with AI to help generate a lot of that content. It's important, of course, to edit it, make sure that the facts that the tool's stating are correct. But I think it'll give you a massive leg up and allow you to do a lot of like top of funnel work really fast. So I would definitely recommend it in that perspective.
And I guess the thing that we're leaving unsaid here is the fears that AI content will tank your website have largely been proven false. Like Google does not seem to be dropping the hammer yet. Cross your fingers, I guess.
I think it's really hard to tell when content is written by AI. So I think if you're using it and you still like do some editing on it to make sure that it's not just gibberish, then you're probably in an okay place where you're not going to see any penalties from Google.
Well, I think the official stance is as long as it's helpful content, if it meets all the other requirements, you're good to go. They could change their mind on that anytime. That's how Google works. But I also just feel like Ryan Law pointed this out, that the amount of money flowing into content creation with AI technology far outstrips the money flowing into AI content detection technology. The detection folks are losing the arms race just on dollars alone right now.
it's always going to be really tough for the detection side, because there's, like you said, there's more money going to the creation side. So detection's always going to be catching up and going to be tough.
You have led a team of content strategists. You've managed other junior content marketers. You've been a junior content marketer yourself.
Yep.
What advice do you have for folks who want to put director of content in that title?
A couple different things. One is like having a clear focus on where you want to go. So that was always the thing for me, like at Animals when I first joined, I was just responsible for writing content. I knew pretty quickly that I wanted to step into strategy. I really enjoyed that side of it. So that was something I probably told my manager on first or second meeting I ever had with her. It was like, I want to be a content strategist. How can we get there? Having that like laser focus definitely helps. And then also at the same time, understanding where your skills gaps are. As I stepped into content strategist role and I realized I want to step up into a team leadership role, my huge gap was I've never done any team leadership. So that's a massive gap. So how can we start to fill that? And my manager at the time, she was awesome. And she gave me the opportunity to just like lead some calls, work through tricky situations with coworkers, just like help build those skills up. Those are probably the two biggest things. One, clear focus. Two, understand where your gaps are and find ways to fill those.
Well, and you're now the second guest who's an Animals alum who mentioned the power of a mentor or a manager who wants to see you succeed in that way.
Even if you're in a situation where you don't have that person, there's opportunities out there. There's organizations like Superpath. I think they have like a specific mentorship path that you can sign up for. So if that's something you need, then there's definitely options for you out there.
I'd love to enter the section of the show where I ask you a bunch of quick questions, but don't feel obligated to keep the answer short if there's a good story. What is the most disappointing piece of content you've ever built?
Oof, oof, oof. Oh, that's a good one. Most disappointing piece of content I've ever built. That one's honestly tough because, I mean, obviously performance is important, but if something doesn't work out, just move past it. Just accept that it's not working out and move past it. Because, I mean, I've published, I don't know how much content in my career. I have no idea, to be honest. And probably 10% of the content I've published has been successful. The other 90% has probably been flops. And that's just kind of the nature of content marketing. You publish a lot of stuff that doesn't work. And you just kind of got to be okay with it. So earlier in my career, those ones that weren't successful, like they hurt really bad. At this point, I'm not even sure I can think of one, but there's a lot of them. That's the problem.
I think that's a great answer. And a good reminder that consistency is so important with content too.
Yeah.
That like a bunch of stuff is not going to rank. It's not or it's not going to bring in sales calls. What do you think is the most underrated distribution channel for content?
I don't know if it's underrated, but maybe underutilized is LinkedIn. It works really well for content distribution if you do it the right way. If you're just like taking a link to a blog post and slapping it on your brand's LinkedIn page and hoping that people will read it, that's probably not going to work so well. But if you use the approach, which I actually just talked to folks at FreshPaint about doing, where I want to use the individuals, the employees at FreshPaint to help distribute the content. So I'm writing copy for them to post on LinkedIn that distributes our content. If you take that approach, it can work really well.
Hardest part of your job at FreshPaint so far and why?
It's definitely, like I was talking about earlier, prioritization. I've got so many ideas and so many things I want to do, but it's only so many hours in the day. I could probably work 90 hours if I tried to do everything, and then I would burn out in 2 weeks. Focusing on those top priorities has been the biggest challenge, but it's a good one to focus on.
Would you be willing to answer that question for Animals as well? What was the hardest part of your job there?
Hardest part of the job there was honestly just staying on top of everything going on. We were big. We had a lot of customers, a lot of companies worked with us, had a lot of people on the team, and just trying to keep track and stay on top of everything was really tough.
If you had no resource constraints whatsoever, infinite time, infinite money, what would you build?
Well, I love that question. I'd probably start by building a really good in-house team, focusing there first. And as long as that takes to hire the right people is what it would take. I think a lot of times people try to force and rush through the hiring process, but I think that's so important for any role, especially content. It takes more out of a person to write content than it does just turn on an ad campaign or something like that. And I can say that because I worked in advertising for a while, so I've done that side too. But I think content's like more creative in some capacities, which means you really need to focus on hiring the right people who have the right creativity for your organization. From there, I'd probably also look at what freelancers do we need to augment the process. And then I'd probably want to start looking at what are some huge pieces of content we can just create that'll be like big, even like bigger than state of industry reports or anything like that. What are the big things we can create that are going to cost, obviously, writer time, but then also like graphic design and maybe even like engineering time to create something really interesting. I would go all out. That'd be fun.
That actually brings up a question I usually ask earlier in the episode that I completely forgot. How do you go about vetting freelancers? What's your process?
Biggest thing to look at is, do they have experience in your specific industry? And if so, make sure you read through all the content that they've written for your industry. I think a lot of times people hire freelancers who have experience with other big name companies, but if those other big name companies like aren't the same audience as you, you might run into challenges there. I would say pretty much in any situation, if you're a product management platform, hire freelancers who have experience in product management or writing for product managers. I think that goes for anything, finance, insurance, health tech. Just make sure you're hiring the freelancers that have the right experience. And then from there, it kind of depends on what you want out of your freelancers. If you're somebody that writes exacting briefs that tells them exactly what to do and exactly how to write, make sure you get a freelancer that's good at just taking orders and giving you back what you want. If you're looking for somebody that is more creative and you want them to kind of take a piece in their own direction based on their own expertise, then look for somebody that has that expertise and the skill set to be able to go in their own directions.
What is something that you think will affect content marketers or content marketing in 2024 that we could or should start preparing for now?
It's so easy to say AI because like, I don't think that's going anywhere. I think we've seen it, you know, hit the market quickly. And like we were talking about earlier, tapered off a little bit, but I think it's probably just going to continue to improve really, really fast. I know a lot of content marketers are still like skeptical of the technology and some are probably like pushing back against it. I would say try to learn as much as you can about it now because it's not going to go away. It's only going to probably get better to the point where it might be able to write a really good piece of content with just a little input from you. So I think it's worth learning the tools, learning the platforms and figuring out how best leverage them. Now it'll just set you up for success in the future.
Cool. Well, let me bookend the episode then by saying, what's next at FreshPaint? We heard a lot about first 3 weeks and prioritization. What do the next 3 months look like?
Yeah, next 3 months, I'm just full bore into content production. I've got that huge backlog of content. So I want to start writing my own content or obviously net new content. I also want to start, once I figure that side out, start writing briefs and get freelancers pulled into the situation and just really start amping up the amount of content we're producing. There's a lot of opportunities to create more brand awareness. There's a lot of opportunities to leverage our partner network to create content. There's a lot of opportunities to help the sales team even more. It's all about just figuring out how we can do all that and just getting going. And that's the focus for the next 3 months is just let's produce content. And then, like I said, probably in about a month and a half, 2 months, I'm going to start circling back and figuring out, is this strategy the best strategy forward? And do we need to refine anything, change anything? And we'll go from there. But yeah, like I said, right now it's all about quick wins, getting into production, and then we'll worry about the back end once we get to that point.
If folks want to get in touch with you, follow you, what's the best way to reach you?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn is definitely the best place to find me. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I post a lot about content marketing. So if you want to follow me, ask questions, make fun of my posts, whatever you want to do, you can do it there.
Awesome. Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining me on the Bounce House and good luck with the new gig.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. I appreciate it. And thanks for having me on.
That's it for this episode of Content Bounce House. Like all good content marketers, I've been repurposing my favorite bits of previous episodes, the best advice, and you can find all of that at verblio.com/bounce. Thanks so much for listening.